It's time for our weekly look at another one of the jury recommendations from the Culleton, Cusack, and Warmerdam inquest into ending intimate partner violence in Ontario. With me, as always, is Aaron Lee, Executive Director of Lanark County Interval House. Aaron, welcome.
Good afternoon. Nice to be here.
We started last week by, I guess, the first discussing the first of several recommendations in a new section that is titled Measures Addressing Perpetrators of IPV. That was about establishing a phone line, a province-wide 24/7 phone line. This one is a little bit more engaged, and we'll go over this. I'm going to read it all, and then I'll get you to react to it. So this is number 33. And it says, provide services aimed at addressing perpetrators of IPV that should include an approach that is not one size fits all, a variety of group-based interventions augmented with individual counseling and case management sessions to assess and manage risk and to supplement services as needed to address individual needs, peer support and appropriate circles of support, prioritizing the development of cross-agency and cross-system collaborative services, service models in the areas of substance use and abuse, general criminal behavior, mental health, fathering, and culturally specific services, the ability to respond immediately with risk management services in collaboration with IPV service providers, being accessible by clients voluntarily and via referral, and not just through the criminal justice system. Programs are funded at a level that anticipates an increased stream of referrals. Make in-custody IPV programs available in the community as well, so that offenders can complete programs started in custody. Conducting audits of PARs and other perpetrator intervention programs for efficacy, consistency, and currency, and increasing program availability and develop flexible options for IPV perpetrators on remand, serving sentences, and in the community. The approach that I'm seeing here, a couple of themes that jump out at me that we've been talking about with the other recommendations, multi-organizations, making sure that many are involved, education being key. And the other thing that really steps out is it is not a one-size-fits-all approach to delivering these services.
I think the other word for me across this recommendation, in addition to the things that you mentioned, is the issue of communication. And I think that what we know from the Renfrew inquest is that there were a number of services that and a number of systems that were engaged in the processes over a number of years with the identified perpetrator. And I think that where we recognize that sometimes the systems fail or that the systems are not as effective as they could be comes in when we're talking about communication, when we talk about monitoring, when we talk about required attendance at groups, yet there are barriers for perpetrators to get to groups. If they live in a rural community, getting transportation to get from one place to the other, to get to group can be certainly challenging. And I think that what this recommendation speaks to in 11 different points is really about the fact that each community is unique. We need to make sure that we have effective and adequate funding to manage IPV supports to perpetrators, and we need to work with perpetrators from the get-go, right? So we need to be intervening early. We need to be offering education, as you remarked earlier. We need to make sure that the group kind of instant group sessions are coupled with individual counseling support, because in a group session, the topic could be something, but one of the group members is actually going through a number of other things and they're not articulating that, or they're sitting silent, or there is a shift or a change in behavior. And we want to make sure that we have counseling supports in place that are coupled with groups. And certainly, I think it's important to recognize that there are lots of various models and services that are available, from mental health, from caring dads, from culturally specific services. But I think that what this recommendation is saying is services need to be layered in terms of communication with each other, in terms of monitoring, and in terms of accessibility, and in terms of volunteering. I think that voluntary services, understandably, might be more effective than court-mandated services, depending on where the perpetrator is in that journey and in their evolution. Because I think that often when you're required to do something, your back is up, your resistance is higher, and you feel a certain level of shame. I think when you voluntarily recognize that there's an opportunity for me to be with like-minded people and talk about and unpack some of my own trauma and some of the things that have been going on for me. I also think that when we talk about, and we have talked about before, the issues of prevention, I think that we need to know, like, how effective are the programs that we're already running? Partner assault response programs are really great, but they've lost significant amount of funding over the years, and so groups have to be shorter in terms of partner assault response. Sometimes there's barriers to gaining access to the victim in the situation and providing that kind of risk communication or a volatility communication to victims in particular situations. So, how do the pieces fit together and how do we increase the efficacy of programs that are meant to address and support perpetrators of IPV? But how do we ensure that we kind of look at evaluating and look at what do we need to develop that's more flexible and is increasingly more optimistic and rooted in a place that reframes a behavior that we can all, as system keepers, that we can all kind of work through and navigate together in terms of best outcomes for both victims and for perpetrators moving forward.
I like to, you mentioned in there about, it being more voluntary, even giving them a choice. You have to do this, but you have this program, or this program. It definitely would help them not feel as if they're being forced into something by giving them a little bit of control as far as choice goes. And also the fact that the in-custody IPV programs, making those available in the community as well, so that it's not a matter of, and we'll talk about, time in custody later on, but it's not a matter of, okay, I'm just doing what I have to do while people are watching me, and then that's it.
Yeah, I completely agree that we need to make sure that there is an opportunity for transfer of skills. We need to make sure that what's supported and what you commence in the inside is something that you can access on the outside, especially when it's a significant support to you as you transition back into community. We need to recognize that often the triggers, coming out of being incarcerated, are just like a multitude, and some of them are not necessarily directly connected to the incidents that put us into the place. It's often directed to family dynamics. It's where am I going to live? It's how am I going to be able to see my kids again? And then it's those who are carrying the anger and the anguish in terms of that trauma and that hurting, and carry that with them on the outside. So we want to make sure that measures that address perpetrators are more available, more accessible, more adequately funding, and more effective in terms of ending the cycle. And we want to make sure that systems are working together and communicating with each other so that we don't continue to miss things that seem to fall through the cracks. And then we have a crisis that we're facing. And we certainly want to be able to address those things in an open, in a transparent, and in a goal-focused way to improve outcomes for people who are engaged in IPV.
Aaron, thank you so much for this. We'll talk about number 34 next week.
Thank you.
Aaron Lee, our guest, the executive director of Lanark County Interval House. I'm Bob Perot for Lake 88 and LanarkLeadsToday.ca.